Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sports Talk Chicago's 20th podcast. What a milestone it is. My name's John Zagluel, owner and operator of the site. Today we have a very big special guest, a lot of news regarding the Cubs, and more. But first, just a few quick announcements. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Shy Talk Sports. Also, make sure to hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram, all at John Zags. And also, if you're in the Tinley Park area and looking for a nice gift shop, a good small business to shop local at, go to Mochi World, a peculiar place, gift shop, and more. It's located at the Tinley Park Down Shopping Center. Its address is 7913 171st Street in Tinley Park. You can call them by using this number, 773-796-8224. Again, that's 773-796-8224. And of course, we have to start off the show by talking about the Cubs and how they won in the NLDS 3-1 over the San Francisco Giants. And I'll tell you, the best game by far of that series, even though the first game ended in a 1-0 score, the best game, of course, had to be that final game 4, in which the Cubs were down by 3 heading into the 9th, scored 4 in the 9th, and ended up winning, thus clinching a berth in the NLCS for the second year in a row. Now, first off, I want to talk about key players from that series who will help out in this coming series against either the LA Dodgers or the Washington Nationals. They play their Game 5 tonight. So first off, I'd like to start with Javier Baez and what a series he had. Of course, we talk about a player who's so versatile as far as positionally on defense, but some people overlook the fact that he did great this series as far as swinging the bat. Hit 375, had a big home run in game 1, 2 RBIs total, and had an OPS of 974. That also complements his season this year, in which he hit 273 with 14 home runs. And a lot of people call him Mr. Versatility on the team. I agree with that statement a lot because of the fact that Baez just does well wherever you throw him. And in this series, he's played at second base mostly, while the Cubs have utilized Ben Zobrist in the outfield since he could play left or right. Now, Javier Baez, this series, just has to keep up his heroics. I mean, hitting 375 is a great average in a best-of-five series. We could carry that into the best-of-seven and say as versatile as he is. Javier Baez will be a big X factor for the team. But one person I really wanted to talk about here was Wilson Contreras, coming in cold off the bench in the 9th inning of that Cubs game. They needed 2 runs. They needed to tie it up. They had 2 guys in scoring position. Contreras, sitting the entire game, comes in, gets a big 2 RBI single, a little ground ball up the middle, but hey, it got through. It did the job. And although, of course, it was a crucial moment in the game, it really cemented the reasoning behind Contreras being called up so early. A lot of predictions preseason said that Contreras would be an asset for the 2017 season, not 2016. But because Contreras was doing so well in the minor leagues, of course, last year led the single-A Myrtle Beach Pelicans and the Carolina League in batting average, he comes up this year and does a great job as far as the regular season goes. He only had played in 76 games at 252 at-bats, but yet hit 282 with 12 home runs and 35 RBIs, and OPS as well, just under 850. And keep in mind, too, something that I've noticed, I don't know if anyone else has, regarding Contreras, is the fact that he comes in a lot, especially when Aroldis Chapman is pitching. Now, I don't know if maybe they have some sort of chemistry, as do John Lester and David Ross per se, but I'd say look out for that matchup as well. And we saw a great example of that matchup between Contreras and Chapman in Game 1 of the NLDS. Of course, John Lester pitching 8 strong innings, but with the Cubs having a 1-0 lead, decided to utilize Aroldis Chapman in a save situation. Now, David Ross, who was catching John Lester, was also taken out of the game, and Wilson Contreras came in only for those 9th inning duties. So again, something to look out for as we move into the NLCS. Now, as far as pitching goes, a key guy for the Cubs, of course, has to be John Lester. After that great performance in Game 1, he did not get another opportunity to pitch, but it has been named already that he will start Game 1 of the NLCS, which would line him up for a possible Game 5 if the series went that far. Now, before I reveal John Lester's amazing postseason statistics as far as his career goes, I want to look back on what a season he really had. A 19-5 record, 2.44 ERA, and over 200 innings pitched. Now, that's the key stat you want to look at, because some national sports writers have made the notion that they will not vote for Kyle Hendricks when it comes to the Cy Young race because he did not exceed 200 innings pitched, which, of course, that's something you can agree or disagree with on your own. But when talking about John Lester, the fact that he did exceed 200 innings, won 19 games, and had the second best ERA in baseball, that really helps him out regarding his own Cy Young case. Now, regarding the playoffs, and I promised I'd read you these stats. Career. Now, despite the 7-6 record, his ERA 2.63, and he's pitched 106 innings in the playoffs, recording 92 strikeouts and a WHIP just over 1.0. So Lester, again, he is the real deal when it comes to playoff baseball. He proved that to us last season in the NLDS and the NLCS, and now he's going to prove it to us this year, and he already did as well against the Giants. Talking about that first game in which it was a pitcher's duel between Johnny Cueto and John Lester. Now, Lester went 8 innings, giving up no runs to the Giants in that game, but a quite astonishing part about that performance is that it only took him 85 pitches to get through 8 innings. Now, this type of efficiency displayed by Lester is what will really help him last throughout the playoffs, help him stay effective. Of course, throwing less pitches means less strain on your arm and less fatigue as the season wears on. And if Lester could keep at that pace at which he did in the NLDS Game 1, he should have continued success here in the NLCS. And on a final note, I'd like to discuss Kyle Hendricks for a moment. Now, in his first start this year in the NLDS Game 2, he was removed after 3 2/3 innings as a precautionary measure, as Angel Pagan hit a comebacker that seemed to have hit Hendricks in his forearm area. Luckily, tests came back negative, and he will be ready to possibly start Game 2 of the NLCS. No official announcement has been made, but some rumors online have stated that Hendricks may start in Game 2. Nevertheless, it'll be great to finally see the MLB ERA champ get to pitch more than 5 innings in a playoff start. Yes, that's true. Kyle Hendricks has never won nor lost a game in the postseason simply because he has never pitched more than 5 innings in a postseason start. Last year, in both starts with the team, he lasted less than 5 innings. And this year, in his inaugural NLDS start, he was unable to go 5 due to the comebacker that hit him in the forearm. So it will be interesting to see how Hendricks can do, especially after this season in which he led the MLB in ERA. The NLCS will begin Saturday at 7:08, and it will be between the Chicago Cubs and either the LA Dodgers or the Washington Nationals. Sticking with the tone of baseball, we're going to move on and talk about the Chicago White Sox and their managerial change, with Rick Renteria becoming the Sox new manager. Does that name sound familiar? It should, because he was the Cubs manager in 2014, just before Joe Maddon came along. Now, I recently discussed Renteria's hiring in my article on the website sportstalkchicago.com, and one impressive thing that really stood out to me about Renteria and his one-year tenure with the Cubs is that he actually produced 73 wins out of a Cubs team that should have lost 100 games. I mean, I put this right here. Here's a quote directly from the article. The Cubs never had a solid three-man outfield and instead consistently substituted an eight-man rotation in which the best option was Nate Shearholz, who now plays in Japan, by the way. On the mound, 13 different pitchers started a game that year, including Edwin Jackson, who posted an ERA over 6.0 and lost 15 games. Now, with the exception of Anthony Rizzo, no other Cubs hitter truly found productiveness at the plate. When contemplating the severity of this scenario, it is amazing to think that the team actually won 73 games and was briefly in the wildcard race as late as July 30th of the season. And another asset that Renteria brings to the table is the fact that he could speak Spanish. So this allows him to connect with his Spanish-speaking players much better on a personal level. They develop more respect for him, and thus they perform better on the field in certain cases. So Rick Renteria was definitely the best managerial choice out there on the market, at least in my opinion. And the Sox could not have hired a better guy considering the position that they're in. So, congrats to Rick Renteria on becoming the next White Sox manager, and I can't wait to see what he does next season for your 2017 White Sox. Now, regarding free agency, the Sox have four guys whose contracts have now expired due to the end of the season. Those guys include Austin Jackson, Alex Avila, Matt Albers, and Justin Morneau. So now they will all be free agents, so the key thing will be to see if the Sox re-sign any of them. For an external option for the team, they have been linked to Josh Reddick already, who is currently playing still as a part of the Dodgers, since they are still in the playoffs as of right now. Now, Reddick is a viable option for the Sox. I mean, a very good offensive bat, a left-handed power hitter, who hit 32 home runs in 2012, and this year hit 10 home runs in limited time. So someone the Sox definitely could go after and make the deal even better. Reddick has won a Gold Glove in his past. So somebody the Sox have been linked to and certainly would be a good fit for the Chicago White Sox. We're going to shift gears here and talk about the Chicago Bulls for a moment. On October 8th, the Bulls played their first preseason game against the Indiana Pacers, and they won 121-105. Some key performers from that game included Jimmy Butler, who scored 15 points, had 5 assists and 4 boards, and Dwayne Wade, in the Chicago Bulls' debut, at least in the preseason, scored 22 points in 26 minutes and tacked on 8 more assists. Taj Gibson also scored 20 points in 19 minutes. Nikola Mirotic also scored 18 points in 25 minutes and had 9 rebounds. Those are your top scorers and performers from that preseason game. In other news, Denzel Valentine recently sprained his ankle, and he will be out for the majority of the preseason. However, he will be ready for the season opener. The next preseason game for the Bulls will commence tomorrow night at 7 o'clock as the Bulls take on the reigning NBA champions, the Cleveland Cavaliers. On October 27th, the 2016-17 season will officially begin as the Bulls will take on the Boston Celtics at 7 o'clock, and that game can be seen on TNT. We're going to move on now to the Chicago Blackhawks as they started their season already, and they lost 5-2 against the St. Louis Blues in Game 1. Defensively, it seemed quite difficult for the Hawks to guard Vladimir Tarasenko and Paul Stastny. Tarasenko scored 2 goals and had an assist, while Stastny had a goal and 2 assists. For the Hawks, 1 goal was scored by Richard Panik and the other by Ryan Hartman. Now, multiple problems plagued the Hawks last night, including the fact that they gave up 5 power play opportunities, and St. Louis cashed in on 3 of them, scoring 3 goals. Also, the Hawks had 5 rookies in the starting lineup, and 4 players made their NHL debut, which made them look out of sync. Here's a quote from Joel Quenneville: "There's definitely some learning going on. We'll accept mistakes through hard work, because that's how you get better." According to Jonathan Toews, who had an assist last night, "We didn't do a whole lot of what we wanted to. Our energy, our speed, and our work ethic wasn't quite there. We've got to regroup and try to come with that energy in that next one and play a little bit smarter, too." That next one, as Toews referred to, will be tomorrow night on the NBC Sports Network as the Chicago Blackhawks face off against the Nashville Predators. This will be the first game of the year for the Predators as well. So that will be at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Make sure to check it out. And right now, I'd like to talk about our special guest for a moment. He rushed for over 1,000 yards in 2006 and made the Pro Bowl in 2008 as a member of the Miami Dolphins. He also scored a total of 36 rushing touchdowns in 6 seasons with the team. After a brief stint with the Philadelphia Eagles, he went to the San Diego Chargers. And in 2014, he ran for a 58-yard touchdown on Wild Card Weekend to allow the Chargers to move on to the next round. He's also a pioneer of the Wildcat offense in the NFL. Please welcome Ronnie Brown to the show. So hello, everybody. We are back on the show today with Ronnie Brown. Ronnie, how you doing today? And thank you for being on the show.
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing great. Doing great. Just very excited for you to be here. And, well, let's get started. So, first of all, I'd like to reflect on your career, specifically as a member of the Miami Dolphins. Now, you made it to the Pro Bowl in 2008, rushed for over 1,000 yards in 2006, and scored a total of 36 rushing touchdowns in 6 seasons with the team. Let's also keep in mind that you were drafted second overall in 2006 by Miami. Overall, do you believe you made a lasting impact on the franchise?
I'm not sure in terms of lasting impact. We had some good years in terms of what we were able to accomplish, going from, you know, I think 2007 we were 1-15 to be able to come back and go 11-5. So I think that was a great accomplishment for a team. But in terms of lasting impression, you know, I don't know. That never was my goal, to be an individual. So, you know, everything I did was based on, you know, trying to help the team. And So I think, you know, in terms of some things, maybe, but, you know, I'm not sure.
So, now, as a Dolphins running back yourself, you frequently shared carries with Ricky Williams, who is another explosive player in his own right. Now, do you feel that you could have done even greater things in your career had you been the premier running back on the team?
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, I think it's just natural to think that, you know, if you're the only guy, there's more opportunity. So, you know, with more opportunity, you get more chances to, you know, do individualistic things. So, I mean, possibly, but, you know, who's to say? You know, I can never say, you know, and I hate being one of those what-if guys, like, or if I was the only guy. You know, so I enjoyed my time. I enjoyed my relationship with Ricky. So we did some great things together, the Wildcat and, you know, some other things that we were able to accomplish in terms of, you know, just a relationship and peers. And so it was great. But, you know, I mean, actually, you know, just to answer your question, you know, quite possibly there's more opportunities if you're the only guy.
Now, you mentioned the Wildcat, and I wanted to talk about that for a minute. Now, here's a little backstory on it for the viewers. In 2008, you had been named the starting running back for a daunting Week 3 matchup against the Patriots. Now, fortunately, you and the Dolphins had a trick up your sleeve. With the use of the Wildcat offense, you rushed for 113 yards, scored 4 touchdowns, and completed a 19-yard touchdown pass. So what was the idea behind the use of the Wildcat offense, and did you think it was going to be as successful as it was, considering the Patriots were really a force to be reckoned with that year?
Well, I mean, everybody knows the reputation that the Patriots have come to establish in terms of their dominance and, you know, how they are usually the team that everyone's shooting for in the AFC East. So, with that in mind, we had Wildcat in for a few weeks. We just didn't use it. I guess a lot of us didn't even think that, you know, we would have the success that we had. And given, because I guess how we were performing in practice, so I think that had a lot to do with it. But when we put it in and the success, I think it was a surprise to everyone. But at the same time, the expectations were there to have those that success.
Now, I read online that you actually employed this offense too at Auburn, and some experts online were saying that it really helped you guys, considering that you had a lot of experience with it. Was that the case?
Well, I had never done the Wildcat. Like, I never played quarterback position, so all of that stuff was new to me. In terms of just doing some different things and moving around in the backfield, I was fortunate enough to share the backfield with another guy in Cadillac Williams. And I think some of the things we did, you know, made it easier for me to be able to excel doing different things and being comfortable in different roles.
So now, after the Dolphins, you played in the Eagles for one season before becoming a member of the San Diego Chargers, and in 2014, you recorded an amazing 58-yard touchdown run that allowed the team to win on Wild Card Weekend and move on to the next round. Take us through that play, and how did it feel to help send your team to the next round of the playoffs?
Well, I mean, just given that role and coming off of, you know, that season in Philadelphia, which was, you know, it was, I guess the best way to describe it for myself was somewhat frustrating. You know, to get that role and have the team to believe in me, you know, I think that was meaningful. But, you know, like I said, my goal out there as well was to go in, be a good teammate, and try to do whatever they asked me to do. And fortunately, you know, just in that case, you know, I went in, we were trying to steal the game and, you know, the crease opened and, you know, I was able to run for a long touchdown and kind of steal the game. We won that playoff game.
So now I want to move on and talk about some current NFL news and notes for a moment. So first off, any thoughts on the Carolina Panthers? Although they were NFC champions last season, they now have a dismal 1-3 record and recently gave up over 500 passing yards to Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons. So any thoughts on them and maybe why they are at the 1-3 record that they are at right now?
Well, I mean, just to be frank, they're a struggling football team right now. And, you know, that's usually normal, especially for, you know, you hear about teams coming off Super Bowls and, you know, receiving all the accolades and year-to-year changes. They got rid of Josh Norman. A lot of guys are hurt. Offensive line not doing that great. You know, Cam's not making great decisions all the time. So, you know, I think it's cumulative, but at the same time, I think a lot of it is last year, in my opinion, they overachieved with, you know, with what they had. I think in terms of everybody talking about their team and, you know, what they were able to accomplish, I think that was great. But at the same time, I think some of that was an overachievement just for the football team.
Now, do you think maybe, as well as what you mentioned about overachievement last year, do you think the hyped-up media coverage has a role in it too, considering they're trying to, you know, match those expectations that they had from last year coming into this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. You just see a team and, you know, the success that they had, it's quite normal for a team to go to the Super Bowl and not too many pieces are replaced, you know, for people to assume that they're going to have that same type of success. And unfortunately, you know, it's hard enough to make it to one Super Bowl. So to try to, you know, maintain that excellence, you know, that's hard to try to be able to back that up with another appearance.
So now I want to move on to the Chicago Bears, considering this is Sports Talk Chicago. So for a minute, they also sit at 1-3 after getting their first win of the season over the Detroit Lions. Now with Jay Cutler on the mend, Brian Hoyer has taken over the quarterback position and has done pretty well these past 2 weeks. In your opinion, does Hoyer deserve to start over Cutler once Cutler is healthy?
Well, I mean, you know, I've never been one of the people that feel that you can lose your position for injury. But at the same time, you know, like people say, this isn't the first time that, you know, something's come up with Jay and this isn't his first time being hurt. But, you know, all the things he's done and accomplished, you know, it just is what it is. He's done those things. But at the same time, you know, everybody's kind of been questioning, is Jay going to be back each season? I think each of the last two seasons or so. So, you know, it may be time for a change. And I guess, unfortunately, you know, given the situation, you know, a lot of people kind of feel that Jay quit on the team or, you know, the way that he took himself out and decided not to play, it wasn't, you know, a coach's decision or anything like that. So, you know, I think once you get that label, you know, that makes it tough, you know, not only, you know, for outside looking in, but for your peers as well.
Now, also on the Bears, being a former running back yourself, any thoughts on Matt Forte leaving the team? And what do you think his role was on the team and as well as the offense as well? I mean, he was really an anchor for that team, and now he's gone on the New York Jets. Any thoughts on him leaving?
Well, I think it was more detrimental than it was helpful to get rid of him. I think, you know, for the amount of offense that he accounted for, you know, in production, you know, it's hard to replace that. And I understand you have young guys, and unfortunately it's a business, and I've seen that side of the business where, you know, we could get a younger guy to try to fill in that role, and it won't cost us as much. So there are different things to make those decisions, but I don't think it was a wise decision in terms of business decision for the organization.
Now, finally, any thoughts on your former team, the Miami Dolphins? They also sit at a 1-3 record and have Adam Gase, which is the former Bears offensive coordinator, as their new head coach. What do they need to do to get back on track and possibly contend for a playoff spot later in the year?
Well, just looking, you know, I think their struggles offensively, you know, turning the football over. We want to be more productive in the red zone. As well as, you know, the defense has to get some turnovers. I think they spend a lot of money, you know, to to get that defense to where, you know, they create plays and, you know, they have a lot of defensive linemen that, you know, have big names and have accomplished a lot in this league. But at the same time, I think those are the expectations when you're given, you know, a certain amount of money and opportunity. I think, you know, I think that's just what it is. And I think they just got to, you know, make more plays.
And now, on a final note, you are 34 years old. You played in the NFL as recently as 2014. Could you see yourself making a comeback if the right opportunity arises?
Absolutely not. You know, I've thought about it. But, you know, I have 2 kids. I have a wife. You know, and I think just where I've established myself and trying to make that transition from the NFL mentally, you know, it's such a hard sport to play. And if you're not all the way in, you know, it's hard to be successful, and I wouldn't want to, one, do that to myself, you know, going out there and not be 100% committed, and two, you know, for an organization to give me that opportunity and not, you know, really, really just feel that, you know, this is what I want to be doing at the point, at this point in time.
All right. Thank you so much, Ronnie. Really appreciate you being on the show.
No problem. Thank you.
And again, thank you so much to Ronnie Brown. Really appreciated you being here. Had some great talk about the Bears as well as your career, too. Such an honor to have you on the show. We're going to move on now to our closing segment, starting with the odd sports story of the day. And this one comes via the New York Daily News. Here's the headline. Dak Prescott would rather sleep than go to a Kanye concert. Dak Prescott is having a dream season for the Cowboys, and he wasn't about to let Kanye West derail it. The rookie quarterback is on the cover of Sports Illustrated this week, and Prescott reveals in the magazine's pages that he turned down tickets to a Kanye West concert, opting instead for a night in watching Thursday Night Football. Well, don't worry, Dak, I agree with you, because Kanye West is not really my cup of tea either when it comes to music. That is your odd sports story of the day. Now, we're going to move on to our punchline of the day segment. Now, this joke regards the Cubs and Jake Arrieta. So here's the question. What do you call a reptile that plays baseball? The answer, Snake Arrieta. Again, as corny as that was, that is your punchline of the day segment. And finally, here's our announcer's call of the day segment. Now, because Ronnie Brown was on our show today, and thank you again to him for being here, we found a highlight of his back in 2009 when he was a member of the Dolphins. They were facing the Rams, and the Dolphins were very close to scoring, only 3 yards away from the end zone. The ensuing handoff went to Brown, and let's listen to the end result.
Said it, Gus. Man, oh man, he took a shot at the line of scrimmage and it looked like it was a great defensive play. And watch, he just bow, turns up, stands up, and punches his way into the end zone. What a sensational run.
A sensational run, but more importantly, a sensational person. Again, thank you to Ronnie Brown for being on the show. And that was your final segment, your announcer's call of the day. That does it for us here at SportsTalkChicago.com. We thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Again, make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports. Also, hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram, all at John Zags. One quick final reminder, go Cubs! They start Saturday in Game 1 of the NLCS, and I can't wait to see them play at this big of a stage.